This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 9th, episode 1627. Today's show is brought to you by Horseswear. Good morning, Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Mary's day is today. She's in the house. Hey, Mary.
How's it going?
Good. And, you know, this is Mary's always here, what, the second Thursday of every month, talking about training and all things training, pretty much. And you all should have been here for the pre-show meeting, which we didn't really meet at all, did we?
We got nothing meaningful accomplished. I'm not even sure what we're talking about today, but we had good conversation.
It was good. It was a good conversation. We're trying to get Mary hooked up. She needs a boy. So anybody out there, let's go through the criteria here, Mary. What are we looking for?
Well, I am exceedingly picky while refusing to address my own character flaws. So it's going to be kind
of an interesting search. And I will vouch for that. Mary is that way.
Yeah. I refuse to change anything about myself.
That's right.
But you've got to change. Awesome if I'm going to date you. Yes.
Tell me what
I'm thinking, like a young Robert Redford, you know, no big deal on the looks.
Yeah,
whatever.
No, this is what she said to me earlier. She said, I'm looking for a guy, doesn't even have to be that good looking anymore. See, that goes with age.
Yeah.
That thing.
Yeah.
So doesn't even have to be that good looking anymore, but you wanted one. Go through the criteria here.
Well, you know, I would like funny, very important. Funny, who gets my specific brand of humor is very important. Smart, rich would be awesome, but I will.
The older you get, the more you concede on that one too.
Yeah,
let's just say rich is a relative term.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, rich in spirit is what I meant.
No, you meant richer than me. You meant richer than you is what you actually meant. Just
exactly.
Everybody's looking for somebody that's richer than they are, at least.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I would say smart is the big one. And, you know, kind of share some common interests there. I when we were talking about this earlier, I let the word geeky fall out of my mouth. And of course, you know, that's always a good one.
And I jumped in and said, well, I'm already taken, Mary. Sorry. But because I'm funny. I'm not rich though. I don't have that one. I'm out there, and I'm married. There's kind of that thing too. But there's a lot of guys out there. I'm going to a podcasting convention in 2 weeks. I will look for. And you know what?
Okay.
You need a non-horse guy because your level of wanting a horse guy that has certain credentials is beyond compare. So we just eliminate that, and you can train them. All right. So you can train them your way rather than getting one with quirks you don't like, because that would drive you insane.
Yeah. And, you know, out in Texas, we got a lot of cowboys and they're cute and everything. And I've done the cowboy thing and it's just, it's not all it's cracked up to be.
You got a lot of oil guys out there, too. How about a rich oil guy?
No.
No?
Well, like if it's. Yeah, no. I don't know.
See?
I don't know.
This comes back, Jennifer, to that picky part. And then I said, why don't you go online, Mary? And you apparently have tried that too and were roundly rejected.
Yeah. So I was already kind of feeling a little down on myself that I couldn't really snag a date. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to do the online thing and get with it. That's what all the hip kids are doing these days. So I spent a very long time honestly filling out an eHarmony questionnaire. And at the end of it, they rejected me. They said no. Like, I could not participate.
I didn't know they said no.
Me neither. It was not a fine moment for me. That was like laughing. A bottle of wine type of night.
This is funny. You're the second time I'm hearing it, by the way.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry.
Well, I was feeling a bit cynical when I filled it out anyway.
Oh, and, okay.
Like, I didn't put anything.
You didn't put all men are jerks, did you?
No, but okay. I was like, I don't want kids and, you know, type of stuff. But at the end of it, they were like, we don't have anyone to match your unique needs. And yeah, I was
rejected.
Okay,
that's sad when they won't even take your credit card.
Right? I mean, at least humor me. Make me feel good about myself for a split second. Like, there's some hope. And
yeah, that's pretty bad. I thought they would take everybody and then just keep them in the system as long as they're willing to pay.
Yep. They soundly rejected me. And yeah.
Okay, you know, that's just terrible, actually, when you think about it. That's just terrible.
I know. It scarred me for life. And I never dated again. No.
So, listeners, if you have somebody that's a little geeky, doesn't have to be horsey, has a good job, maybe has a, you know, at least a couple $100 in the bank, and is willing to put up with all of Mary's quirks, what else? Oh, and loves
funny.
Junk food. Has to love junk food because Mary doesn't eat anything else.
Loves junk food, but not like, how do I put this? Not be the kind of person they have to like smash through your house to get out of your house type. Like, you don't have to be super in shape or anything, but you know.
Loves junk food
reasonably.
Junk food.
Yeah. Sure. Someone who could love me more than junk food.
Oh, geez, that eliminated the other half. So, you're not needy at all, are you, Mary?
No. Yeah, I don't know. I've never had someone tell me I was needy. You know, a lot of high maintenance people think they're low maintenance.
Yeah.
So I really don't know. I've not had a mirror held up to myself in that aspect.
All right. Well, one of these episodes, we're just going to do the All Mary episode. And I have a friend that's a psychologist. We'll get her on and we'll analyze
goodness.
This whole situation. All right.
We'll
see where we're at there.
We could do like The Bachelorette with me.
Or we could try and clicker train you. Maybe that would help.
You know, it does work on people.
It does. And you love junk food, so treats are good.
Heck yeah.
It's like that episode of Big Bang.
By the end of the day.
Did you see the episode of Big Bang where he was training Penny with chocolate?
Yes. That is a classic. Like, if no one's ever heard of positive reinforcement, that's a classic video. I think it's shown in a lot of behavioral classes in college and
graduate. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
The only thing he did get negative reinforcement wrong, but for a TV show, they did a pretty good job with it.
Well, Jennifer, we're totally off the rails here, as we have been all morning. So can you get us back on the track? Apparently not. She's having a coughing fit in there. So.
I'm having a coughing fit over here. I'm sorry.
She's been fighting the
coming
flu
up on today, Mary. Yeah. Coming up on today's We're Training Mary Kitzmiller episode, brought to you by Horseware, Mary is going to start us out with the good, bad, and ugly of training aids. And then Callie Ray King is going to stop by and chat about her training philosophy. Ought to be interesting there. And then after the break, Heidi Johnson McLaughlin is going to help us kick our fears. And then filling in the final minutes, Mary is going to answer your training questions. So stay tuned for the break, folks.
That's a lot of stuff talking about there today, which is good. I have to mention, though, first, oh, God, I hate to bring this up now. I'm going to change my mind about mentioning this. Okay, close your ears, Mary. Just go like this. La, 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 la.
Okay, I'm doing it.
All right, next week, I do feel like a schmuck. Next week is Valentine's Day.
What?
And we're doing... Oh, God. Next week is Valentine's
Day. Glenn just snorted. Oh, that was awesome.
It's my favorite holiday.
I can't.
You know why? Because I bought a whole tub of Valentine's themed candy corn. So I'm totally psyched. So yeah, you can mention Valentine's Day. I'll just be eating my candy corn. It's all good.
Okay. I'm just posting in the auditor room now. Will anyone contribute to a GoFundMe for buying Mary flowers on Valentine's Day?
Aww.
Okay, it's posted in the auditor room. We'll see if we can get $20 together to send you some flowers, okay?
That is not sad in any way.
All right, it is Valentine's Day, and we have a sponsor, so I have to talk about it. Kelly Heard Jewelry is donating a $50 gift card for jewelry, and we're doing a Valentine's trivia contest on the Horses in the Morning Show on Monday at 10 o'clock. If you wish to be in the running to be one of the four contestants for the trivia contest, head over to Horses in the Morning on Facebook. There's a post that I pinned to the top. You have to put your name under that post. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to pull four names out of the hat of people who are interested to join us on Monday. You have to be free, Monday at 10 o'clock Eastern. And we're going to have a trivia contest to get one winner of the $50 Kelly Heard Jewelry gift certificate. Now, if you're not familiar with Kelly Heard Jewelry, they make some of the nicest of the horsey jewelry. So you can check them out. Just Google Kelly Heard Jewelry and you'll find it. And you have a chance to buy yourself something for Valentine's Day. Guys out there can play too. We need some guys. So you can play for your spouses. We don't care. We would love that. Now, the questions are going to be horsey, heart, and Valentine's related. So it could be anything, pretty much. So yes, that's what's going on. Get your, you have to go over to Horses in the Morning doc or Horse in the Morning Facebook today and find that post and put your name under it so that you get into the hat tomorrow for the drawing. All right. Are we good? Can we move on now?
I think we're good.
You're all right. Just checking.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Okay. I'm going to live. Okay. I think I'll make it.
All right. Good. Training tip. Let's change the course of events here. It's your
okay.
turn. I don't do training tips.
Okay. Awesome. So I've kind of seen this. My training tips are usually inspired by what shows up on my Facebook timeline. And there's a popular post going around about using training aids like side reins or draw reins or martingales and the like. What was I going to say? Oh, you know, every so often I'll see a post where someone's posting about their horse and they've got a picture of them and, but they're riding in draw reins. And it kind of is these days on social media, it sort of erupts in a bit of a firestorm where people are like, why are you using that on your horse? And, so I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about, my thoughts on using, these types of tools. I would say draw reins is, what I look for if I'm going to use a training aid, and really I don't use them as much anymore, but I don't think that if you see someone using a training tool like this, that you necessarily have to think, oh, it's immediately bad. They're abusing their horse. It's terrible. There are some that I don't like the mechanics of, draw reins specifically, because when you use something like draw reins, you're not giving your horse an opportunity to find any kind of relief from that pressure. No matter where they place their head, they're always going to feel a certain amount of pressure. So, you know, draw reins specifically, I'm not a huge fan of. But when it comes to side reins and martingales, I don't have a huge issue with side reins. It's not something I use very often anymore, but I do understand the value of. If you use them in a correct way, I think you can teach your horse to sort of on his own find that sweet spot. And I think it's a great way kind of let your horse just get a feel for the bit and get a feel for where he needs to place himself. And by kind of letting him find that on his own, I think it does have some positive effects on your riding. Obviously, you need to use them thoughtfully and correctly. You don't want to keep your horse strapped down for long periods of time. You don't want to have them too tight. The side reins that are elasticy, I'm not as big a fan of because, again, I don't think your horse ever has any kind of relief from that pressure because those draw reins just kind of hang on them no matter what they do. I think what I'm trying to get at is when you see pictures of someone using a training tool like that, I don't necessarily want someone, don't bully that person. That's just not nice because we've all been at different points in our training careers where we used something or we didn't understand a concept and we did things we probably have grown past. Just have some consideration for that. Don't bully a person. Don't go crazy over it. But I think it's important to kind of have a balanced look when we're talking about training tools and see, okay, does that work? How would that work? Is it something that can have a positive effect on a horse? So those were just kind of my thoughts that were going through my head on using those type of aids. I don't think that everything that's out there, I don't know what I'm going, where I'm going with this, but pretty much on those, I just think it's okay to use them in certain situations. But if you have any doubts about them, you can absolutely get your horse to do all those things like, having collection and softness and suppleness without.
Are you still there, Mary?
I am still here.
Glenn's not. He's talking to himself over there in Studio A, and he doesn't
realize
it.
I was just on mute, so I'm back. Jennifer needs the phone number for the first guest before.
I put it in the show notes. Oh, you know what? I didn't hit save.
Well, that'll help.
Okay, hitting yes.
All right, so why don't we do another question? We have a little time here. You want to do another question from a listener? And
let's
this one, I can help with this one, actually. And that's a rare event. Poor Chantel says, bolting pony caused by dogs. Dog ran towards her while she was harnessed and we were driving. She bolted, cart flipped, hit a tree. I am planning on starting super slow when the weather calms and using a friend and her training cart for help. And we've started clicker training, but I don't know if I'll ever be able to really trust her fully again. I got to tell you, obviously all the listeners know that I have a pony that has a tendency to bolt in a cart. Now, unfortunately, we've been able to miss the tree and the cart flipping part. Boy, this is a tough one because when I asked one of the top drivers in the world, I said, "What do you do when a pony is bolting? When your horse is bolting in a cart?" And they said, "You've got two choices." And neither one of them were good. They said, "You got two choices." And this is assuming that you're pulling on the reins and nothing's happening, right? Your pony is just out of control. So, they said you point towards a very solid object like a house or a wall or a side of a barn, something. And one of two things is going to happen. Your horse is going to stop before they hit it, or they're going to make a sharp turn right before they hit it, and everybody's going out. And I think that's probably what happened here, is they tried to turn right before they hit the tree, and the cart flipped, and that's what happened. Unfortunately, there wasn't a lot of suggestions from them on what you do here, is you try and get to a path that's open, or you had one of two choices, get to a path that's open, and they run it out, or if you're in a crowded area like we were the first time he bolted on a road in a neighborhood and he went into the other lane, then you just try and head to something solid. That's what they said. Now, they're beyond that. Okay, she's beyond that. Now, how do we, this pony's going to remember that forever. How do you get past that? And Chantel's remembering it forever, too.
Oh, yeah. That's a tricky one. Although I don't have hardly any experience driving, I have worked with horses that have had something traumatic happen that results in a very dangerous habit that, you know, like bucking or bolting with a rider or bolting while leading. Excuse me. And, you know, the best case scenario is you just, that just should never happen. But once it does, you know, I remember starting colts. There were a couple of things that I was told are the worst thing that can happen to you. And it's going to mess your horse up. And one of them is like when you saddle, if you let the, if you don't saddle horse correctly first time and they start moving around or bucking and that saddle slips under their belly, it messes them up in a psychological way that is just very hard to fix. They can get over a lot of things when you're doing colt starting, but that is one of the things. And then on the ground working with a horse, if a horse bolts and they get the rope out of your hands, especially more than once, you've got a deal. You've got a long-term issue there because they realize, oh, there's escape. And so, you know, I think this bolting with the cart is something that runs along those lines. It just sort of messes up the horse's mind. They do realize that there is a way out if they need to. If they just go crazy enough, they can get rid of all the pressure. You know, they can destroy the cart, dump their people, and the more they're allowed to do that,
and I wanted to add too, while you were coughing there, I wanted to add too that what we did, you know, after his first time bolting on the road, okay, which was the scariest of the bolting he's had, and that was horses running up on the side in leaves. So there was horses in a field right beside the road. They ran down the field and he heard that and just went. We did two things. And I highly recommend the first of these two, both of these things, actually. When we started him again, we made sure that he had even, it doesn't have to be another cart, it can be a rider, but somebody in front of him. So when you go out again, he has a comfort zone. They're less likely to bolt if they have another horse in front of them that's not bolting. Okay, so that's one thing that we did. So Jennifer, from that point on, always rode out in front. We were always behind Jennifer. Now, one of the things you have to keep in mind is your outrider, your person in front, has to be off to the side. Because if your pony decides to bolt again, you don't want him running over the rider. So that's one thing to keep in mind. The other thing we did that helped a lot is there's such a thing called half blinkers. And they're not a full set of blinkers like you have on a carriage. They're a half set of blinkers so that when they turn their head, they can see behind them. So they can turn their head just about 20 degrees and they can see behind them. And that seemed to help Scooter a lot is the half blinkers and then the having somebody out in front. So those are the two things that we did, and then we did it every time. And, you know, it's hard because you're relying on somebody else being there with you, right? But you're going to it's a confidence-building thing now for both of you. I had the same problem, by the way, Chantel. You're not alone. I was a little nervous because when he bolted into the other lane. If there had been a car coming, he was so fast at his bolt, we would have hit him dead on, straight on. So fortunately, there wasn't. There was a car about to pass us, which is our neighbor that lives right next door, and who is a horse trainer, a professional horse trainer, and he was about to pass, saw what was happening and didn't. And he texted me after and said, that was a good save. So, I felt good
Nice. That
the professional horse trainer said that. And Chantel just started listening. Chantel, go back and take a listen. We've been talking about this for a while. But that, you know, that was the two things that we did to really build my confidence and the ponies back up. I don't know how you feel about that, but.
Yeah, and with these kinds of issues, you're going to find something that a specific horse finds comforting, you know, whether it's changing a piece of equipment or you know, providing that extra security with the horse. I would say in my experience, you know, I've never had it driving, obviously, but I have had horses that have gone through traumatic things and then developed, you know, very crazy habits that were dangerous and kind of pretty extreme. And I would say, you know, when I see something like that, how do I attack it as a trainer? I think you can go one of two ways. You can either go very, very extreme, which means you would have to be very masterful in using something aversive to make your horse never want to do that again, or go the other way, like Chantel is doing, you know, back it all the way down, very little pressure, control your environment, start all over and build up again. And I would say definitely the latter is your best approach, because the horse is already scared. They're scared. They've got bad memories. So adding more pressure is not really going to help the situation. And so, you know, I like the clicker training is a really great approach.
But would it help for this situation? That is a good question with clicker training when it comes to being in a cart that's, you know, 7 feet behind them. You know, how does it apply there? And
well, a common mistake with clicker training is you might take this specific horse and say, well, I'm going to teach it what the clicker means and click and treat it. And now it knows. And let's go driving down the road and I'm going to try and click it as we're driving. That's not going to work. You need to build it all the way back down. Clicker training is about micro shaping. So I would personally, if this horse was sent to me for training, I would work on a very solid whoa cue. I'd work on transitions. So I'd work on things like that on the ground, you know, before I hook anything up to this horse. You know, we could do an entire show on the concept of poisoned cues. When something bad happens to a horse in a particular event, they will associate, you know, they will associate, for instance, driving with that event forever. And, you know, you need to go back and, you know, unpoison all of that whole experience for the horse. So I'd start at the very beginning. I teach things, and it doesn't seem like it would relate, but it does. I teach things like a ground tie, teach him patience to stand quiet for long periods of time. I would, you know, work on my in-hand stuff, make sure I can get my horse to follow me around, to stop when I stop, to go when I go, you know. Then I'd probably progress into long lining and work on it all in the arena, with your long lines, and, you know, just get it really, really solid.
Being that there was a dog involved, there was a catalyst for this, right? Would you then during that long lining have a dog in the arena with you, make sure that we're desensitizing toward the problem? My pony Scooter, and I asked Monty Roberts this, it was the leaves. It was horses or dogs and leaves, that rustling. And I think he just thought somebody was coming to get him, right? There's a bear in the woods. And his suggestion was actually to take leaves and bed the stall in leaves, so that he heard that all the time, you know, that same noise. I don't know. Would you have a dog involved at that point, or?
You know, it'd have to be a dog I really, really trust. And here's the thing about desensitizing, and this is actually a great point. So when we're desensitizing horses, whether it's for driving or starting a horse, or horses had a bad experience or trying to get them over it, we try to come up with as many different scenarios as we can. The tarp obviously is awesome. You know, if you did a lot of tarp work with a horse, I think that would translate to leaves, because it's scary and makes crunchy noises. And so we try to come up with a lot of tools and obstacles and scenarios we can get our horse used to different aspects. But that said, we cannot get our horse used to everything that's going to happen. And with dogs specifically, I don't know if I want, you know, if I'm driving down the road and an aggressive dog comes at my horse, A, I don't expect them to stand still for that. And, you know, B, I could have like the horse swimming in dogs in my arena at home. But if an aggressive dog is coming at my horse, you know, there's just no way for you to get your horse to, you can't practice that. What I'm saying in the home, you can't get some rabid dogs and say, okay, let's do drills on this. So what you can do, desensitizing is obviously great. What I can do is teach my horse, listen, things are going to happen. There's going to be pressure in your life. Things unexpected are going to pop out of the bush and run at you or towards you alongside you. I can't prepare you for every specific scenario that's going to happen. But what I can do is get you in the habit of knowing how to react. So with my colts, I want my colts to react one of two ways to different things that can happen, whether it's a bag blowing across the arena or my hat falls off and hits them on the butt as we're loping along. I either want them to stop, relax, wait for further instructions, or whatever gate you're going, continue at that gate, chill out, not a big deal. You know, or at the very least, if you do get scared and I pick up on your face, the best way to react is not to bolt through it, but to give. If I can teach my horse to give, anytime you feel pressure, give to that pressure. You're going to be safe if you give. That's how I can get my horse to react to unexpected situations that you just can't prepare for. You know, there's a clinician who talks about, he's got a great analogy about it. What if the thing that spooked your horse, let's say it was a deer. How do you buy some deer and prepare for it? Or, you know, can you pay a deer to come out of the woods and, you know, run circles around you every day till your horse is calm and then, okay, I'll see you tomorrow? No, but by teaching your horse, A, I'm going to get you exposed to lots of scary things that make crazy noises. B, if you do get scared, here are the best ways to react. And I would say it's either stop, wait for further instructions, keep going the same rate you're going, or if you feel me pick up on you in any way, give to that pressure. That's where you're going to be the safest. And so I'd say from a clicker training standpoint, if you reinforce those reactions, being calm, waiting for instruction, giving to pressure, and you reinforce them heavily over and over and over again, then I think you're on the road back to recovering from this situation.
And I'm pretty sure, by the way, if Scooter ever sees a deer running across in front of him, we're in the tree wrapped around it. I think we're going to be in the same position as you yeah. tell at that point.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break for our title sponsor is Horseware and Ice Vibe. And then we're coming back with our first guest to talk more training here on the Mary Kitzmiller episode.
In the world of horse racing and elite equestrian sports, it's all about how to prepare and repair. Ice Vibe is a truly portable and highly efficient circulation therapy system for your horse. Before activity, prepare to prevent damage by using the Ice Vibe's vibration pads. Repair after the event by using the unique combination of cold packs and vibration to minimize swelling and encourage blood flow. And because it's battery powered, Ice Vibe is truly portable. The essential and affordable tool to prepare and repair. Ice Vibe.
You can find out more details about Ice Vibe at ice-vibe.com or horseware.com, or ask your local tack shop or online supplier for more information about Ice Vibe circulation therapy from Horseware. All right, your guest is ready.
All right, so our first guest is Callie Ray King with CRK Horse Training. How are you, Callie?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, wait a minute. I got to talk to Callie first. Callie, you're in Honeybrook?
Yes, I am. Honeybrook, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I grew up in New Holland. So right down the street from you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know
we were neighbors then.
Yeah, you have you're definitely in horse country out there. All right, sorry, Mary. I just saw you were Honeybrook Stables. I was like, "Wow." Somebody from Honeybrook. Haven't talked to somebody in Honeybrook in 20 years. So.
Right. Yeah, that's
not
great.
A problem. How is your guys' weather there? Are you guys under any kind of snow? I don't look outside my out front door as far as weather across the country.
Yeah, it's some strange weather because we had 55 degrees yesterday, and then this morning we woke up to about 3 inches of snow, and it's still coming down.
We've been at about 80 okay. degrees here, so I don't think Texas did winter this year. I think, which I guess is fine, except it, you know, nothing dies. I think I'm still getting bit by mosquitoes, and so this summer is going to be interesting. But anyway, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about your program, and so you know, I've read your bio, and you've got a really kind of cool website, a lot of training courses, and you've done a number of different disciplines. Kind of sounds similar to me growing up, trying just a little bit of everything. So tell us a little bit about your program. What kind of riding are you doing? What kind of training are you doing with people?
Sure. So I both train and teach out of my farm here in Pennsylvania, and I specialize in working with young horses or horses with behavior issues. So anything ranging from trailer loading to biting to riding issues like bucking or rearing or not going forward. And specializing in that, I get to work with a lot of different types of horses, and I get to work across all disciplines, which makes it really fun. So that's what I do on site. And then about 4 years ago, I started publishing a weekly video blog, and that kind of led me into doing courses online. So I have a number of courses that I instruct, and then now I also have other instructors come in and teach courses. So we've got, you know, kind of part of the program here on site, and the other part is virtual now.
Very cool. It's really neat to see, you know, the horse industry sort of, you know, taking advantage of the digital age. I always think that we're kind of, as a whole, we're a little teeny bit behind what the sort of national trends are in social media. But it seems like in the last few years, a lot of guys are really taking advantage of the online course format, or like a video library, or as you're doing a blog. Have you noticed a change in your following? Obviously, going from probably local training, do you think that people are getting a lot out of it? Are you finding a lot of interest with people wanting to do online courses?
Yeah, there's a lot of interest. And one of the most rewarding things for me is that I get to bring, you know, instruction, and especially with the people that I'm starting to have come on and, you know, and help me instruct courses, able to bring some really high quality information to people that live in parts of the world where they just don't have access to sometimes a trainer at all, let alone someone that is, you know, has been doing it for 30 years and is really knowledgeable. So being able to just bring that kind of information to people that wouldn't be able to access it without what we have now through the digital age is really fun, really rewarding.
Well, and reading your about, I really like your saying about, I'm not looking to be the next horse training guru, which I really like, because I think we're kind of slowly leaving the age of the, you know, there were the big names out there that if you bought into their program, you were their follower, you didn't look at anything else. And it really was like a guru system. Like, this is my, you know, this is my advisor on everything. And this is, I'm only doing this program. And I think that was a great starting point. I think it's good when you're beginning to commit to one program, at least a little bit, put a couple years into learning the one, you know, learning one way of doing things, and, you know, getting your feet wet, getting experience with horses. But what I'm starting to see now, and I'm really excited about, is the recreational horse owner. One, they're becoming a lot more educated. I find when I do clinics, and you might have noticed the same thing, I'm having to do less of keeping people from dying, you know, like teaching them how to do groundwork and how to do an emergency stop, and more of just being a person who can supplement their program of, you know, okay, your lead changes are looking pretty good, but if you do this and this, you can get them even better. And so I think we're kind of during that age where people are able to sort of pick and choose more like a buffet rather than subscribing to a guru. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree completely. And I think, you know, what you mentioned earlier about things changing with the internet, I think that's helped with that, because it's so easy now to go on to YouTube and watch a lot of different videos and, you know, learn a little bit from each one, but also for someone to get a feel for, you know, I like this kind of style or philosophy of training, and maybe I don't like this as much. So just like you said, they can pick and choose and be a lot more educated, even just from free material that's really easily accessible.
And that brings up a good question. For me, this would be my personal question as a horse trainer, with so much information out there, and there is a lot of free stuff on YouTube, and in other places where, you know, people just are more informed and they have a lot more information to give out. Do you think there's still room for, you know, for horse trainers who are doing this as a profession? Are you finding that's a hindrance, or is it actually helping?
I think there's still a lot of opportunity, because I always like to subscribe to the idea that even if two people are teaching pretty much the exact same thing, the same philosophy, sometimes one person just has a different way of wording something that it's going to work for the student. I mean, even for myself, I'll have other teachers, other clinicians come into my farm. So, you know, my regular students that I'm working with every week, they get to ride with them. And a lot of times that new person will tell them the same thing that I've been working on communicating, but sometimes they just say it a little bit differently and it'll click for my student in a way that, you know, maybe it hasn't. So I think there's always opportunity, because everyone has kind of a unique way of teaching and explaining things that can just work for different people.
I think that's such a good point. And it reminds me, my mom played tennis for a number of years, and she took lessons with a few different pros instead of just, you know, subscribing to one guy. And, you know, she say that you'd find that one guy that would tell you something that everyone else has already told you, but they'd say it in a way that you got. You know, one of the examples she gave is people kept telling her to hit up on the ball. And she's like, what the heck does that mean? And couldn't quite get it. And someone finally just happened to be on the same wavelength as her and break it down to where, you know, after years, she was finally able to say, oh, okay, yeah, now I understand. And so, yeah, I totally agree with that idea. So I see that you have a number of online courses. Do you have any one in particular that's really popular with people that kind of resonates with them?
You know what? I kind of have been creating this kind of suite of courses to try to fill all the different pieces that come into, you know, horsemanship and being a good rider. So one of the big things, and you kind of mentioned it earlier too, is, like I said, I'm not looking to promote a specific training method, but I like to just educate on how the horse learns so that people can communicate more clearly, and then they can change on one of behaviors or even improve their own riding. Because what kind of brought me into this different way of doing things was I've always been really interested in human psychology. And the more that I started studying animal behavior as well as human psychology, I realized that there's a lot of parallels, there's a lot of similarities. So because of that, you know, we have horse training courses, and then I also have kind of like a sports psychology course where I brought in a counselor and a psychologist and a sports therapist to kind of talk about mental game stuff. And then we have another course that is just focused on movement, so understanding anatomy of horse and rider, how they fit together, how movement actually happens. I think to answer your question about the most popular one, it's probably the horse behavior class. And that's most likely because that's my area of expertise and the one that I get probably the most excited about. So that one's been pretty popular.
You do a good job. I got to tell you, I'm a little bit of a marketing guy, and you do a great job. I mean, your website, the videos are good. I mean, you got into vlogging at the very beginning of vlogging, and now it's become a thing. But when you started it, it wasn't a thing. So congratulations on that. Your instincts are really good. But now we're going to put you to work, because we have listener questions we have to get to today. So this one's for you and Mary to tackle. This is from TJ. She says, teaching a horse to stop without using your reins. So just using your seat. At one point, her horse stopped on a dime as soon as I took my legs off of him. But apparently, I can't use that cue if we're doing dressage. So any thoughts, ladies?
I'll let you go first, Callie.
Sure. Yeah, so I definitely have some thoughts, and anything that's riding related has kind of two approaches to it, because we can think about it from the aspect of training the behavior, but we also have to think about it from the perspective of movement and riding position, because sometimes if we're asking our horse to do something, but we're inadvertently kind of getting in their way, then that can be a problem that's going to just make it more difficult for them to do what we want. But I'll start with kind of the behavior component. I like to work on things, work on responses one at a time, and think about having a really clear cue for each response, and then what's called fading that cue, which is basically just making it more subtle. And for working on getting a halt without using the reins, it's basically what it is. It's teaching the cue of the seat along with the reins, and then it's just fading out that rein cue until the horse is just responding to the seat. So the first thing, I kind of caught the tail end of the question where you mentioned about taking your leg off. I like to think about when I have my leg on, it asks the horse to go forward, but I release that pressure as soon as they do go forward. So like my leg closing against the horse, or, you know, a little bump with the heel or the calf, ask the horse to go forward, but then I release that pressure as soon as they go. So I use the cue for halt is completely separate from the leg cue for going forward. So that's where I would actually start, is working on teaching the horse to go forward from the leg cue, and then just maintaining that forward movement without having to keep the leg there. And then what I would do next is work on, think about asking for your halt from the little shift in your seat first, which it's difficult to explain sometimes without having the visual of what asking for a halt with the seat really means. But to me, it's just a small movement. It's just a small shift back. So it's really what I like to tell my students is, if you're walking on your own 2 feet and you notice that when you come to a stop, your weight shifts slightly before your feet stop moving. And that's the same feeling of the weight shift in the saddle. So I always do that first, and then I'll put a little weight on the reins, and then I'll also use a verbal cue. And I use them in that sequence. And then once the horse starts responding, I just start feeding it. So I just make it more and more subtle until they're just responding from that seat cue. And the other thing that I would add is, when I train young horses, I usually put a lot of value to the halt. So I will, I'll give some rewards when I'm first training the halt, whether it's from the ground or from the saddle. Like, I'll halt and then I'll just from the saddle reach down and give them a little treat. And even just a few times as they're first learning in the beginning, it makes them like the halt, and they'll start being more of looking for your halt cue, so it can really help you fade it a little bit faster. So that would be my suggestion.
And, you know, I have to agree on all those points. And I will say that a lot of the points that you brought up are elements that reining trainers use to actually build their sliding stops. So the cues might be slightly different. As TJ mentioned, you know, obviously you can't throw your legs off your horse's side in a dressage test, because it would be weird. But, you know, I would say first decide what your cues are going to be. And I've catched myself doing this, of asking the horse for a very specific maneuver and then realizing I haven't even come up with how I'm going to ask, how I want my horse to respond. What's it going to look like in the end? Do I want them to stop off of the word whoa? Do I want it to be off of my seat, off of my reins, off of my legs? In the case of a reining stop, I'm going to use all four. I'm going to use my voice. I'm going to use my seat. I'm going to use taking my legs off a horse's side. And you can gently release your leg a little bit without it being this big, obvious thing. So what were those four things? So voice, seat, legs, and then reins. And when I begin to teach, so I'll begin to teach a sliding stop at ride 3 or 4, even ride 1. And it takes me about a year to get it to start being pretty consistent and something I can start prepping for the show pin. But when I break it down, I train all four separately. And I use the other cues to kind of help back them up and fade, as Callie was mentioning. But I'll teach the horse, okay, if we're riding along and I just pick up on my reins, I don't change my seat all that much. I don't say a word, whoa. I don't make a big deal about taking my legs off. Will you stop off of only my reins and get that going pretty good? And then I say, okay, can I get you to stop just off of me releasing my leg? Can I get you to just stop off of my seat? Can I get you to stop with just my voice? And then I'll put them together in a billion different little combinations. But I'm very obvious in the beginning. I'm very careful to actually point out what do I want my cue to be, and how do I want my horse to respond? And by having a few different cues to get a maneuver, the great thing about that, especially if you're going to be in the show pen, is you do not have to rely heavily on any one cue. So if you've got a horse that will stop off of your seat and your voice and releasing your leg, then when you pick up your reins, you don't have to take up as much pressure on their face, because you've got all these other cues to help supplement. And you'll pick which cues and how you want your horse to respond. It'll be specific to your preferences and your discipline. And then as far as like maybe a specific exercise, one thing I really like to do, and you can do this no matter what discipline you're in, is rollbacks on the fence. Now, when I say rollback, it doesn't have to be a correct, like, cow horse, the horse slides to stop and picks up his shoulders and wheels around 180 degrees and lopes off the other direction. But I call it rollbacks
because that's good, because I'd be over the fence.
So yes, exactly. Yeah. but I'm going to use that fence to help me out, because I think when you kind of are in the middle of the pen trying to pull on your horse's face constantly, sometimes you get in a bit of a tug of war and the horse kind of will pull through your hands a little bit. So I use the fence, and what I like to do is I'll pick up a trot, go along the fence, and I use this to teach my voice cue and my seat cue. So let's focus on the seat. So I'll trot along the fence. I want to make sure my horse is comfortable trotting along the fence. I want to make sure they're moving forward. They're pretty relaxed. They're not anticipating a stop, but they're not running off either. So I get them to the point where we can just trot a nice line along the fence. And then what I'll do is I'll go ahead and add my cue, which I'm going to just, if I'm posting, I'm going to stop posting. I'm going to sit down, relax, stop riding. And I'm going to give my horse a couple of seconds. I'm going to count one Mississippi, two Mississippi. And if they don't stop, they probably don't know to in the beginning, I'm going to pick up on my outside rein and gently turn them into the fence. And I'm going to wait till they're almost completely through that turn, and then ask them to trot off the other way. And sometimes I'll hustle them out of it a little bit. I don't want to scare them, but I want them to think, you need to trot the other way now. So again, with my reiners, I would like it to be a nice roll back where they're sitting on their butt and picking up their shoulders and coming through that turn, but you don't have to get that. All you want is the horse, just, they go the other way. And then I'll trot along the fence some more and find another spot. And I'm going to sit down, relax, let the air out of my body, give them a couple of seconds. If nothing happens, if I don't feel any change, I'm going to pick up on the outside rein, gently turn them into the fence. Do not jerk them into the fence. You know, if it takes them a while to make the turn, let them have all the time in the world. It can be a little bit claustrophobic for them to turn into the fence to go the other direction. So let them figure it out, take their time, and then I go the other way. So what's going to start happening is the horse is going to sense a pattern. Every time I sit down, we turn the other way. When I sit down and relax, we turn the other way, over and over and over again. After a time, the horse, when I sit down, they're going to anticipate that turn, and they're going to, at the very least, slow down their body. If I feel that kind of change, or if they do come to a stop completely in order to make the turn the other direction, then I do not finish that turn. I just pick up on my reins and let them settle into that stop. And like Callie mentioned, I want them to feel good about that. So I will release all pressure, let them sit for a good long while, scratch their neck. If you have a treat, hand them a treat. If you're like me and you click and treat, you can click and hand them a treat, make them feel really good. If they give you a monumental effort, get off. I don't care if it's 15 minutes into the ride. It's not going to get any better than that. Get off, put them away, and then come back again the next day. And the great thing about using the fence is you're not, it gives the horse a little bit of a job. So they're not just wondering, why are you pulling on my face all the time? And the horse has to, in order to make that turn, they have to stop. They have to kind of pick up their shoulders. And so you can actually use it to develop a pretty balanced stop. The last thing I'll say is I wouldn't do this too many days in a row. Do it a couple of rides and then leave it alone, work on something else, because you will get a horse that does over anticipate and you'll be riding along the fence and all of a sudden they turn the other way without you asking. So, you know, just kind of use a little bit of common sense and balance when you're taking that approach.
All right, ladies, I hope that helped, RJ. We appreciate that. And thank you, Callie, for helping us out. We appreciate you being on today. Where can people find you and all of your videos and everything that you do?
Yes. Again, thank you for having me on. They can find me at crktrainingblog.com. There's a ton of free videos up there and the info on the courses too.
Very good. And we will definitely have you back. So keep in touch and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks again. Kevin.
And of course, Horseware, you know, it's snowing where Callie is, and they're having a major blizzard up there in the Northeast. I think Helena's being dumped on today in Massachusetts. And we all know that if you've been in winter for a long time, some of your blankets are just plain wearing out. Well, why go to a blanket that's going to fall apart again? Your blanket currently did that. So go to Horseware. You've been putting off buying a Horseware blanket and you've bought the cheap ones and they keep falling apart and you're wondering why. It's because they're not made as well. You want a Rambo, you want a Rhino, go over to Horseware.com. Check out all of the options. They have retailers all over the country and most of the online retailers as well. It's not too late to get a blanket. It'll last into next year anyway. So if yours is falling apart, you're thinking, well, I could just get through the rest of this winter. Keep in mind that March has the biggest blizzards. So you have that to look forward to. And I'm saying that as the two of us are down here in 80 degrees. So Mary and I apologize for
that. It's so miserable.
It is. It's terrible. The flies are out. It's awful. But you know what? You're stuck up there. You can't do anything about it now, so you might as well get yourself a blanket that's going to last. Go to Horseware.com. And we want to thank Horseware, too. They have just signed on to be a sponsor of the WEG show for the next 18 months. We appreciate that. And they're also our title sponsor for Road to the Horse coming up in March. Well, now we have another guest coming up here. Let me... Sorry about this. I had the wrong window open. So do you want to introduce her?
Yes. So we have with us today Heidi McLaughlin from fearlessrider.com, also the author of Kick Your Fear of Horses. How are you, Heidi?
I'm good. How are you? How are you both this morning?
We're great.
Not too bad.
We're better than most of the Northeast, apparently. So
Well, I'm in Southern California, and we've had a lot of rain, but I do see the sun today, so it's a good day.
That's always good. And so I see that you just got done with the Horse Expo in Pomona. How did that go for you?
It was great. There was a lot of energy and a lot of good clinicians and great vendors. It was a really fun weekend, and I met a lot of really nice people. And I'm looking forward to going to Michigan to the Horse Expo in Lansing in March.
Awesome. So I actually met you at Pomona last year, or I don't, had we met before that? Have we met at Road to the Horse? I can't remember.
I was at Road to the Horse. And I watched you, and that's how I knew of you. And I was like, wow, who is this gal? She's got a handle on a horse. And then at Pomona, I went over and introduced myself and then found out that you and your mother are extremely artistic. And that was a nice, pleasant surprise, because I don't think, Mary, there's anything you can't do.
I like to think so. No, we, you know, it's kind of a blessing and a curse to, you know, take interest in so many hobbies, because it's fun to try all sorts of different things, but at the same time, you get a bit overwhelmed, sort of end up in a habit of being a jack of all trades, master of none. But so your specialty with horses is working with people on fear issues, and you go across the country doing a lot of expos, talking about this and doing clinics. How did you get started? What inspired you to do all this?
Well, I am not a horse trainer, and I don't give horseback riding lessons. Actually, I'm nobody special. I'm just a middle-aged woman who used to be scared to death of horses. Well, I wasn't scared of horses, but I was scared of every aspect. Whether I was riding, if I was riding, I was always worried about what was going to happen and if I could handle it. And then if I was leading a horse, I thought they were going to run into me or run up my back or something. If I was picking a horse's hoof up, I thought they were going to kick me. So I was all around nervous and tried to find somebody that could understand my fear. And most of the people would shake their heads and kind of get frustrated with me because I'd never improved. So I went through 7 horses and 7 trainers in 8 years.
That sounds, you know, and it's kind of, unfortunately, a little bit more of a common experience. I don't know if everybody goes through a trainer a year, but, you know, I do know folks will find an issue frustrating.
Okay, don't rub it in, Mary.
Yeah. You're the only one.
A bit different. Yeah, you're the only one. So 7 trainers in 7 years, and was it because you couldn't find
7 trainers in 8 years?
8 years. Oh, there we go.
You get that right, Mary.
So did it all have to do with this fear issue? Did you even know that what the issues you were dealing with were based around fear at the time?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. When I was about 8 years old, my grandma had a ranch, and she had a couple of barn sour horses, and we got to go out to her ranch every weekend in the high desert here in Southern California, or every other weekend or so. But that was my only exposure to horses, and I didn't know at the time, but my grandmother was scared to death of horses, and so she kind of pushed that fear on me, not really knowing, thinking she was protecting me. But what happened, I was about 8 years old. I had never had a lesson. I'd only ever ridden double with my grandpa. And then they decided to let me ride by myself. And it was about a 17-hand Tennessee Walker. And his name was Lopez. I tell my Lopez story in my book. And as we went to, everything was fine. You know, all they told me was to kick to go and to pull back to stop. I was never given a lesson. I don't even think they had arenas in those days. I mean, you just went out and rode. And I went out, and just as we turned the corner to come back to the barn, and of course, you know, they know it, he started to speed up and kind of trot. And when he felt no resistance from me, because I really had no instinct on what to do, he thought, oh, well, I'll do an extended trot. Oh, I think I'm going to gallop. Wow, she's letting me go even faster. And by then I'm screaming, and I dropped the reins, and I was holding onto the horn. And in my little tiny 8-year-old brain, I thought, I need to get off. So somehow in this wild gallop all the way back to the barn, I managed to get one leg off. I was holding 2 feet in one stirrup and holding on to the saddle, screaming my head off. And from that day on, my grandparents named me the trick rider.
And
so when I got back to the barn.
Are you still there, Mary?
When I got back to
the barn. I thought I lost you there for a second. Sorry about that.
So I got back to the barn, and my grandmother, after I jumped off, says, run, like the horse was going to eat me. And so I ran, and of course, I was so terrified. My legs went out from under me. I fell down. I was trying to run. And my grandmother, I realized now, when I look back, my grandmother was really terrified of horses. She never rode. She was really afraid to be around them. If she was feeding them and they came over and tried to grab feed, she was terrified. She would lock herself in the feed room. Anyway, I didn't realize all that at the time, obviously. But anyway, this was never dealt with. No one ever told me what I did wrong. They kind of laughed about it and threw it under the rug. And nobody ever said, well, if you had done this or that. So I never really had a lesson until I got older and had the money and the time to finally get a horse. I was like 39 years old. And I realized after I bought the horse, this dream come true that I was in over my head. I had no idea what I was doing. And so I kind of feel like it's kind of something that everybody, a lot of women especially, find themselves in this predicament of riding when they were a kid, having this dream. No one ever let them have a horse. And then when they get older and they have the time and the money to do it, they find out, oh my gosh, I'm in over my head. I don't know what I'm doing. And then they don't enjoy their horses, which was what happened to me.
And that, unfortunately, is a pretty common experience. And I almost think like the entire industry has developed around that experience, that, you know, there's a lot of women of that generation, several generations, really, that, you know, kind of the same thing. There wasn't a lot of, you know, organized instruction in especially in certain areas where it was literally just let's throw them on a horse, kick to go, pull to stop. And most kids survived it without, you know, anything too bad. And then, you know, when a lot of these women came back and, okay, now I'm, my kids are out of the nest and I've got the income to realize my dream and get a horse. There's a lot of these, fear issues, that either remain from experiences that happen with a kid or, you know, just the realization that, oh, horses can be dangerous. And, you know, it's not as easy to fall off now as it was when I was little. And, you know, and I go through that as well. It's always very surprising to me. Something will happen. I'll get bucked off a colt or whatever. And I don't think anything about it at the time I get back on. No big deal. But then like 6 months later, I'll be getting on some other colt. And for some reason, you know, that little alarm goes off in your head of, oh, wait, where did this come from? Why do I feel this way all of the sudden? And so, yeah. And so what did you do? You know, if someone else has gone through the same thing, what are some kind of building blocks? What are some steps they can take to start getting over that fear and building some confidence?
Good question, Mary. The problem is that, and I like trainers to understand this. You can't teach someone in fear the same way you would train or teach someone who is not experiencing fear. The reason is the psychology of fear is that our brain is in self-preservation mode when we're in fear. And when that happens, we get blocked. So anything you've ever been taught or tried to learn is not even sinking in. So you just don't want to die. And so you go into this self-preservation mode and panic, and there's no reasoning with fear. It is the only emotion that takes away any ability to have any kind of reasonable thought. And so that, you know, is very, very common. I would ride and I would get off the horse and I would just go, I didn't die today, and hope that the next day when I got on or tried to get on, because I made a lot of excuses not to ride, I would get on and go, okay, I hope I don't die today. I mean, I tried everything. I tried, you know, drinking a beer before I got on, and a glass of wine. I've had people tell me they'll take a Valium, and all we become is a fearful drunk. And we don't want that, because then, of course, our senses are not where we want them to be.
I was going to say, maybe you're drinking the wrong thing. Maybe it should have been vodka or whiskey. I don't know.
A fireball.
Yeah, well, that's Mary's choice.
funny you should say that, because this weekend, this was a new one. Somebody told me they drank a mimosa, and I thought, oh, champagne. I never thought of that one, little orange juice. But basically, once you remove the emotion of fear, it's a habit, and you start to require yourself to learn better skills. I teach people to break the habit of going to fear, and then we practice over and over and over a skill to replace it, so that instead of just boom, we're going to fear, we're now instinctually going to a skill to replace it. And that's how you start to build confidence. So in my case, my aha moment was I was having another particularly frustrating lesson that I always had. And I was driving home in my car thinking, why am I doing this? My husband used to say, I'm really glad you're enjoying this very expensive sport. Come home crying every day from lessons or, you know, or trail riding or not riding. And I remember thinking in my mind, the trainer kept saying to me over and over, heels down, heels down, heels down, heels down. Like I said, even when she was saying it over and over, I put them down for a second. But then as soon as the horse would go into a trot or anything, I would go right back to it because I'm not thinking about the skill. I'm thinking about staying alive. So I thought to myself, what if I just worked every day on my horse at a walk and then eventually at a trot, just thinking heels down? Because sometimes trainers can be firing different types of suggestions over and over, you know, heels down, sit on your pockets, relax your hands, you know, don't look down, all these things. And a fearful rider, it's just like a scramble mode, you know, it's like womp, 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 womp. They're not listening to any of that. And this is what was happening to me, which is why I went through so many trainers. They're like, well, I'm not really sure what else I can do to help you, but I know Susie down the road because they're so frustrated with me. But I remember thinking that day, you know, what if I just worked on that? She kept saying it over and over. And so most people, when they take lessons but are in fear, they won't practice during the week, which makes your lessons just a waste of money and time if you don't practice. But they don't practice for two reasons. They don't know what to practice. And number two, they're afraid to practice without the safety of their trainer there. So that was me. So I thought, well, what if I just I could walk around an arena and just think heels down, nothing else. And I did that for about 30 minutes a day. Then I just walked out on trail, just heels down, heels down. And then after about 4 or 5 days of that, I started at the trot. And I realized I was not having to think about it anymore. It had gone to rote. It had gone to muscle memory. I didn't have to think about it. And so I realized, wow, that worked. So once I had that down, I went to the next skill. And I thought, well, I had this habit of staring at the horse's head. And we all know why we do that. We stare at the horse's head. Then we can be prepared when their ears perk up, where the spook is. And then we can tense our body and grab onto their face and then they become hypersensitive, and then that's where the train wreck is. So I broke the habit of staring at the horse's head or looking at the ground the exact same way. I spent an entire week or 10 days, and I wouldn't move on to the next skill until I had that one down and didn't have to think about it anymore. Once you start having like a seat and balance and you're actually riding correctly, you start to gain more confidence as a residual benefit. And so knowledge is power. You know, so many people that I go to help, I'll say, do you even have a trainer? Have you ever had lessons? And they say no. And they wonder why they're afraid when they're putting their life in the hands of a, you know, 1500 pound animal with a mind of its own. It's kind of ludicrous if you think that, but that's how we think. We've been taught since we were a kid that it was that easy. Just kick to go and pull back to stop.
I love that answer because to me, I see such a strong parallel between people dealing with fear issues and then horses dealing with fear issues and then how to attack that. You know, when a horse goes mm-hmm. into that flight or fight mode, same thing. They're not thinking about how can I best serve my rider? They're trying to live. That's all they care about. They're trying to live. You know, maybe they'll take the rider along with them, or maybe, you know, in order to survive, they'll dump all the dead weight and go. And so you can't train a horse in fear. And like we were talking earlier with the bolting pony, you cannot train the bolt out of the pony in the environment that was terrifying to him by hooking him up to a carburetor. You've got to start back in a safe environment. And then I really liked what you touched on with working on one thing at a time, because I think, and I find myself also taking this for granted, especially teaching riders, you know, as a professional, one, a lot of stuff comes to you instinctually when you've been riding for years that you take for granted. You don't realize that not everyone has the instinct to put their heels down. In fact, our typical primal fear survival instincts are exactly the things that are going to get us thrown off. You know, the things that, you know, like pulling your heels up and going into this kind of tense fetal position. It's not a very good seat for shock absorption and to be prepared, looking down at your horse instead of, you know, the old cowboys say you need to get a faraway look in your eye. So you have
I never heard that one, Mary.
Yeah. Anytime I get on a colt, I had old guys like, get a faraway look in your eye. I'm like, okay, what does that mean? But it really, it gives you, I don't know. I think having the horizon kind of in your viewpoint gives you a sense of, it gives you a better sense of your environment instead of focusing on the horse. I think you can ride out a reaction better if you're sort of taking in all the scenery. But and this is something that it goes into the core concepts of positive reinforcement training. Instead of trying to train three or four things at once, which is too confusing for an animal or person, especially if they're dealing with, you know, fear and pressure, pick one thing. Okay, this is the thing we're going to focus on, and get that into a habit, get it on cue. Get it consistent. Okay, that's pretty good. That will only need light maintenance from now on. We don't have to reteach it every day. Now, what's the next thing? And they've even done, you know, I'm getting all into my excitement about this. They've even done clicker training with people where they do riding lessons, and that's what they do. They say, okay, this time we're focusing on this aspect, and that's your heels. And you get that to where it just becomes a habit. Okay, now let's focus on what you do with your seat. You know, where should your seat be in the saddle? Okay, that's good. Now let's go on to the next thing. And it might seem a little bit tedious and like it would take forever, but once you get that one building block set, that here's this one thing, this is solid, this is rock solid, then it's easier to add to it rather than trying to build your house, you know, without establishing any kind of foundation.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that I found that pretty exciting because I see a ton of parallels in horse training. And then for me as a trainer, I tend to do the same thing probably that some of your trainers did of, you know, no, you need to put your shoulders back. No, quit pulling on your horse's mouth. Oh, you need to look over here. Oh, your heels are up again. You need to put them down again. And I think you're absolutely right that it'll help someone, even if they're not dealing with fear, even if they're just a novice and they're learning, you know, pick one thing at a time and focus on that.
Well, and that's a proven fact. The mind works on the building of small accomplishments. Otherwise, we'd be doing calculus when we're in kindergarten. But so I always explain to people that you learn 1 + 1 = 2, and pretty soon you're counting on your fingers when you first are learning that. And next thing you know, by second grade, you can do it without having to think about it. You know that. So then they add the next phase, and then you get into division and subtraction and all those things. And by the time you reach high school, then you can get into calculus, because the brain can only absorb so much. And if we skip all those steps, so imagine if you never had math in your whole life, and then you got into high school and tried to learn calculus. It's the same thing as the way we approach our horsemanship, which is, and I was this way too. I didn't understand that foundation was what was going to keep me safe. And not having a foundation and just jumping on, you know, it's like I've told people, it's the same parallel with a swimming lesson. Imagine if the first day I had a kid and it was their swimming lesson, and I made them jump off the diving board into the deep end on the first day of their swimming lesson. It's the exact same parallel with horsemanship. And why we're willing to take that kind of risk is amazing to me, because now it seems so clear. But I was one of those people. I did not realize the skill level it took. And I realized life is in danger. When I figured out the technique, that's when I wrote the book about it. I thought, you know, when I was in fear for 8 years, I looked high and low. I was looking on the internet. I was looking at books. I was looking for guidance. First, I tried to hide it because it's embarrassing. That's frustrating. So the more you stuff something like that, and especially fear, the more it develops. And I just stuffed pretty soon. You know, I'm like this total lying, fearful writer acting like I'm so important. And I got the clothes, I got the talk, I'm mucking the stalls, you know, all that. But heck, I didn't want to get on them. All that. It's like I so wanted to immerse myself into horses, but the fear had me being such a liar. I always tell people, you know, horses don't lie. People do. They're going to lie about their ability. I've been to enough clinics where on a Friday night, when you get to the clinic, they're all talking about how great they are. And the next morning, all of a sudden, they're all terrified. And I just kind of think it's funny because that's what I was when I was in fear. I went to a clinic when I was in fear, a 6-day clinic with Chris Cox. This was back in 2002, before he was really famous. He was just up and coming. And, you know, the night before, you know, meeting up, we're all like, just thought I was an intermediate rider when I went to him the first time. I didn't even know what groundwork was.
Hold on one second. You're cutting out on us a lot. We're only getting some of it. And we're running out of time anyway, but yeah, your phone is going out on us. You can find Heidi at fearlessrider.com is where you can find it. Her book, Kick Your Fear of Horses, is written there, is found there as well as a whole bunch of other stuff. So Heidi, sorry, we're having a connection issue, but it's fearlessrider.com is where you can find it. Oh, she's completely gone now. So I thought that her connection was going out. Almost sounded like her phone was running out of battery, actually. But there you go. So we talked about a lot of different things today, from fear to stopping to going to bolting, all kinds of things.
Yeah, I'm inspired now. I want to go and I've got this got my wheels turning a little bit. I want to go work on some things. But yeah, that was a pretty jam-packed show.
Well, I did want to mention before we wrap up, if you missed the beginning of the show, go back to the beginning and take a listen and you'll know what we're talking about. As far as sending you flowers, the responses we've gotten, a lot of people who said they would contribute, but they more want to send you a bouquet of Cheetos with a side of breakfast burritos.
That sounds awesome. But
do they know you or
won't.
What?
I know, right? Am I transparent in that
apparently.
Way? In all seriousness, I will live without flowers. And so, you know.
You can't live without Cheetos and a side of breakfast burritos.
No. But I can buy my own. Spend that money and time on your own loved ones. And I will get by somehow. You know.
All right.
I'm going to watch like. Some Lifetime movies with some wine and, you know, do some light crying that night.
There you go. That's what people with spouses do. What are you talking about? All right.
I know, right?
Thank you so much, Mary. Could tell everybody where they can find your stuff.
I am at marykitzmiller.com or on Facebook under Mary Kitzmiller Horsemanship, and got a new page going called Positive Performance Horses. We've got a few cool horses we're training up to be great partners for people, so you can check that out on Facebook as well.
Very good. marykitzmiller.com. And, you know, check out her artwork and the things for sale there as well. I love your new sign out in front of the house, by the way.
Isn't that cool? I really, really enjoyed making that.
Yeah, tell everybody what it says.
It says Rancho Not So Grande, which is, it's pretty fitting.
It's pretty fitting. And right behind it is this very old rusty pickup truck that's there as a planter, I believe, right?
Yes. Well, my stepdad bought that for my mom. It's actually a really nice little truck, and she wanted a truck out in the yard that she could put landscaping in and flowers and stuff. And some guy told my stepdad, he goes, "Do you know how much that truck is worth?" And he says, "Yes, my marriage." So, so there will be no restoring it. It's a planter.
All right, very good. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. Don't forget, if you want to be entered into the drawing to play for the gift certificate from Kelly Hurd Jewelry, then get your entries in today. Head over to Horses in the Morning and look for the – I pinned it to the top where you can put your name to – and we'll draw the winners tomorrow to play on Monday. And it is really bad ads tomorrow, so get your ads into Jennifer at HorseRadioNetwork.com. We're announcing more prizes tomorrow for this month, so you'll definitely want to do that. Thanks, Mary.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, everybody. And thanks to Horseware, horseware.com.